Hey everybody, welcome to the Songtown Studio. I'm Marty Dodson, here with Clay Mills. I've got a topic to throw at Clay today. This one is the biggest business mistakes songwriters make. So just as far as doing business as a songwriter.
But Marty, songwriters are incredible businessmen.
Yeah, famously.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking back, you know, signing my first contract. I think it was a single song agreement, and I just signed whatever they gave me, and I was just thankful for it. You know, a publisher was going to pitch my songs to artists. I've got to sign this. And thankfully that it was an honest publisher, because I've heard horror stories. You had a story about company that wanted you to sign a contract, and then in there you discovered about if they changed one word. What was that story?
No, it was, yeah, it said they got all my publishing, and it said for no money. And it said if they changed one note of my arrangement, which was my work tape,
right,
just a rough work tape, then they got half the writer royalties on the song. And they wanted all the writers of the song to sign this. So they were going to go demo it, change one note at least, and then they would own half the writer's shares and all the publishing. Luckily, I went to a lawyer, and he was like, you cannot sign that. I mean, this is horrible.
Yeah.
Predatory.
And you can't go to your co-writers and ask them to sign a crappy deal like that either.
No.
Because then you would look stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moral of the story is always get a lawyer to look over your contracts. Always.
And I think, too, you need to educate yourself on what these things mean. Yeah. You know, not that you want to be able to read it yourself and know all the answers, but, like, you know, if I can read my contract and at least know the questions I need to ask my lawyer. You know, yeah. So that I'm not just going in blind, you know, saying, I don't have any idea what any of this means, you know. So I think if you want to do business as a songwriter, it's really important to get a relationship with an entertainment lawyer, not your brother who does, you know, real estate law,
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, because you need to know things like what is a reversion clause?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is admin? What is a keyman clause if you sign with a company as a staff writer? I mean, there's not a lot of things to learn about, but, you mm-hmm. know, most writers don't want to learn about it. I mean, I see this in Songtown. We have courses to help you learn these things, and there are least popular courses. And I get that. Nobody wants to do it. But the second somebody gets a contract put in front of them, they want us to look at it, and they want to ask us a million questions. So I think that's not the time, because, you know, a lot of times contracts are time sensitive. So that's not the time to try to learn the business. Time to learn the business is before you get a contract put in front of you.
And they will pressure you, you know, particularly if they're not honest.
Yeah.
They'll pressure you like, oh, we're going to miss this pitch if we don't sign this contract, you know. So it's super important to understand those things and to get a lawyer.
Our writers, you know, will come to me and they'll go, but if I don't sign it, you know, my co-writer already signed it. And if I don't sign it, they're, you know, what if they don't pitch our song? And I'm like, when your co-writer signs a deal, doesn't mean you have to sign that deal. So little things like that. A lot of times as aspiring writers, we would put pressure on ourselves, you know, and you need that attorney to go, hey, step back.
Calm down.
Step away from the microphone.
That's right. Lay that pen down, walk away. No, that's great. I think another one, this was huge for me. By the time I got my first publishing deal, I had demoed probably 20 songs that I was really excited about. And it probably cost me $10,000 or more. And so I get my first publishing deal. I go, you know, which of these songs are you most excited about? And he goes, we're not going to pitch any of those songs. And I'm like, I just spent $10,000 on these and you're not going to pitch them? And he said, Marty, they're just not there yet, you know? And that's something we see weekly.
Exactly.
In Songtown. You know, people come to us for feedback on a song that they've already spent $1,000 demoing or however much, and it's just not there, you know? And so I wish, looking back, that I had spent that $10,000 learning to be a better songwriter or getting mentoring to find out which ones were worth spending money on, you know, to, right. to get kind of a professional opinion on it. But I spent all that money thinking these are great, you know, and they were the best things that I had at mm-hmm. the time. But I think we all have this a hard time understanding where our songs are in, you know, commercial market realm. And so I would say one of the biggest mistakes is like just spending too much money too quickly on demo and songs that are not quite there yet.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that falls into this category of what I call the arrogant songwriter trap. And I understand it. Creating songs and putting yourself out in the world is one of the most difficult things that you can do. You're exposing your heart and you're trying to do something that most people can't do. And so it's tough. So to compensate, we tend to get arrogant. Oh, you know, God gave me this song. It's perfect. Or, you know, these are my best songs and they're hit songs. You know, we get that a lot. Yeah. People send us songs and go, these are better than
anything than, on the radio.
Yeah, these are just awesome. And then when we dig into them, we find there's still a long way to go. I understand it. I think you need a certain amount of arrogance to believe that you can do this. But at the same time, I think you got to be willing to learn, you know.
I think it's a very special blend of arrogance and ignorance. Yeah. You know, in my case, I think it was more, I didn't know.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, and I guess it was the little bit of arrogance mixed in of like, well, I think these are great, you know. But yeah, I mean, you and I did an event kind of over a couple of years a while back. And we had a guy, the first year he came up to me and said, hey, I've got 10 songs on here that are better than anything on the radio. You know, I want you to listen to them. And I'm like, okay, first of all, I'm turned off by that approach because it is arrogant.
Yeah.
But I checked out his songs and they were good, but they were not great. And they were not better than anything on the radio. The next year, he comes up and hands me the same CD with the same songs on it. And I said, oh, you know, my brother, you gave me these songs last year. And I said, I listened to them and they're not better than anything on the radio. And he goes, well, I believe they are. And I said, well, have you played them for other people in the industry? And he goes, oh, dozens. And I said, so dozens of people in the industry think they're not better than things on the radio, right. But you think they are. So you're going to keep doing the same 10 songs. And I was like, haven't you written anything better than that in the last year? And he goes, no, I'm not going to write anymore until I get those cut. And I'm like, man, you know, you can't just close off your ears. So like, la, 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 I'm going to ignore all the feedback.
And just human nature. I mean, part of, you know, we're talking about understanding how the business works. If you hand somebody CD in the old days, a CD, if you send somebody a link and email them and say, these are the best songs in the world, immediately they're going to be like, okay, these better be killer or you're wasting my time.
Yeah.
You know, you never want to overstate what, you know, because people are going to recoil and it's just not going to be a good response. Yeah. It's better to undersell.
Undersell and overdeliver.
And overdeliver.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things somebody told me starting out in the music business. Better to undersell and overdeliver.
Yeah. I mean, I would much rather somebody say, hey, I've got one song. I think it's the best thing I've ever written. Would you mind listening to it? And then I hear it and I go, oh, my goodness. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
As opposed to them telling me it's incredible and setting the bar way up here where I'm kind of a skeptic listening to it. I go, you know, prove it, you know. So I think you're right. It's important to kind of understand where you are in the industry, to be humble, but also really be open to listening to people's feedback. And if dozens of people are telling you these songs are not great, then you need to write more songs, not just keep pushing those 10 songs on people.
Yeah, you know? And I don't know if you're like me, but when I first came from New York to Nashville, somebody said, well, you're going to have to write, you know, 500 songs before you even know what you're doing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I didn't believe it, but it probably took me a few hundred songs, probably 300, before I got my first cut by a big artist. And it takes time, you know?
It may have taken me more than that. You know, it does. It takes a lot of songs. But my first publisher, Kim Williams, always said, you got to write out all your bad songs, you know, yeah. like get them all out of you. I think my last one would be understanding how the money works in songwriting is super important. Yeah. I was 7 years into writing deals. So I had my first deal was 5 years, and then I was 2 years into the next one, and I had a big hit. Must be doing something right. And I got a check that was almost exactly to the dollar, in fact, a little more than what I owed my publisher.
Right.
And so I go, so I knew my publisher got a publishing check for that amount. And I went in and was like, hey, I'm recouped, right? And he goes, no, none of that went to recoup you. And I'm like, wait, what? And 7 years into doing this professionally, I didn't understand fully how publishing works and how the money flows and, you know, which money goes directly to the writers and which money goes directly to the publishers and is owned by the publisher, not your money that repays your debt to them, you know, because I had accumulated this debt for them paying for my demos and them paying me a monthly draw or advance and all these things, you know. So it's really important to understand where the money goes so that, and this kind of leads back to your first point, that when you're signing those contracts, you're understanding what it means, you know. My first publishing deal, they recouped from my ASCAP royalties as well as my mechanical royalties.
Oh, no.
Which was not a great deal on paper.
But then they'll tell you, but you'll recoup faster.
But you'll recoup faster.
Well, the translation is you make no money.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it was, there was other things about that deal that made it worth it to me. It's like I had a mentor who's a Hall of Fame songwriter for 5 years, you know, that kind of thing. But it was important to understand that when that ASCAP money came in that my co-writers were getting,
right,
I was not getting that money. You know, it was going to pay. You were
getting training.
Yeah, exactly. I was paying for my song college.
No, I learned the same way. I had a string of hits for this publishing company, and they're like, okay, we want to renew your next contract, and let's renegotiate it. And they go, well, it looks like you owe us $500,000. And I'm like, what are you talking about? $500,000? I know for a fact that you've made over $1.5 million. How could I still owe you? You know, it was the same thing. And they used it as leverage to pay me less on my next contract. And I was like, no, I think I'll go somewhere else.
You know? Yeah. And, you know, once I learned that at that publishing company, I learned how it worked and I educated myself. Then when it came time to renegotiate a deal with them, I understood it. And so I was coming at it from a different place.
Right.
You know, and I've seen that with songwriters that, you know, had a friend that was like, man, they gave me a $75,000 a year draw. Isn't that amazing? And I'm like, yeah, except you have to pay that back out of royalties when it comes in. You know, so it sounds great on the front end, but you understand, if you understand how it works, you go, maybe I need to take a lower draw so that when the money starts coming in, you know, it's not so hard to recoup my situation and all that. So I think it's super important to understand how the money works and where money goes from different sources and all that kind of stuff if you're going to be a songwriter and be in the business.
Yeah. Hey, we want to thank our Sweetwater sponsor, great musical instrument company. They'll hook you up with whatever you need to create music. Marty, it's been great.
It has been. Check out the show notes for links to our books, to Songtown itself, and we'll see you next time.
Cheers.